showing up for each other, especially when it's difficult, with curiosity, brings a closeness that you really can't achieve in any other way. You know, I often say to people, they're like, you know, how do I know this person's the one? Of course, it's a bigger conversation, but I think one of the biggest things is ask yourself, this person that I'm with or that I'm dating or that I'm interested in, if I had to imagine the worst day of my life, how do I think they would show up for me? Welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
This time from Los Angeles.
Yep.
Very excited to be recording with you, and especially on one of my favorite topics.
Yes, me too. I wonder if our listeners know what that is. You will find out. It's always interesting to be back in LA. I feel like wherever you grew up, you can't help but think about who you were and what you experienced, and hopefully what you are today is new and improved in lots of ways, but it still brings up, it's an energy, right? It's a frequency. It brings up like ghosts of the past.
Ghosts.
I've had a day.
Good ghosts? Oh, you had a day? Didn't notice.
I had a day. Really? Yeah. But I'm excited to, I turned it around and I'm excited to record this with you. So you know this about me. I like to organize things.
Never noticed.
And then you think that like sometimes I get pleasure out of it, which I do, but it's more about the job that's finished. I don't like clutter. I don't like...
It's like me, like if I'm drinking a bottle, I want to finish it.
Yeah, I don't care about that. But the thing about like if you clean out your closets or you clean out the kitchen cupboard or you notice everything, right? You see the filth, you see crumbs.
Well, you do. I'm not sure that I do.
You see what's broken, what needs to be glued, what needs to be thrown out. Am I definitely
being a Virgo?
No. It has everything to do with me being thorough. But it got me thinking that people don't really do that in their relationships, right? Because people, whether they want to admit it or not, if we're honest, we like relationships to be seamless. We want to experience the good parts of them, the joy, the fun, the pleasure, the curiosity. We don't want disruption.
People just don't want, I think especially men, but probably women as well, is that I just don't want the drama, right? It's not even so much a thought process.
They want the hassle.
Right. Like last night at dinner, we actually had, I thought, what was a very interesting question, right? What percent of relationships are a real partnership? Like you mentioned, and I'm assuming you don't mind me sharing, that when you looked at your parents' relationships, it was never a partnership.
No.
Even though, obviously, you know, each one of them had their responsibilities.
Roles.
They did roles, but it was never, right? It was never seen, never... was a relationship, never felt like a relationship. And so we asked the question with our friends at dinner, you know, what percentages of relationships, of marriages do you think are really a partnership? With is that real? It's not so much that we do everything together, but it's a real sense of this is our thing. You know, this is completely off topic, but, you know, my father, the Rav, and myself, we really love it. I love the history of the mafia. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing about the mafia, it was, you know, this is, I don't know how famous it was here in Hollywood, New York, there was La Cosa Nostra. And that's Italian for this thing of ours. So I just think about it in marriage, right? That you know, how many people, even if they're in an okay relationship, whether it's really this thing of ours. And it also often doesn't feel like that. Even in relationships where there's love sometimes, certainly in relationships where there isn't, you don't get the sense from the couples that it's a partnership, a real partnership, that this is our thing together, all parts of it. And of course, usually it's even much worse than that, right?
Well, I think that people for sure go into relationships desiring friendship and partnership and vulnerability and authenticity. The issue lies in that most people aren't a friend to themselves. So then they go into this now friendship partnership with somebody else and they really just don't know how to navigate. And that's why I'm excited about today's episode, because there's some things and tools that I want to share and things we're going to discuss that I think, and that's why I speak about love as often as I do and write about it, because I don't think it has to be as difficult as it is. I think the hard part, or maybe the more challenging part, should be probably finding the person. But again, first you have to find yourself. And then after that, there is a formula to follow that you can have a happy, fulfilled relationship where you have partnership and you have friendship it's constant work. And of course, part of that is removing the ego. But of course, it's nobody's intention that I'm going to be in this thing with somebody for the rest of my life and not be happy.
Right. And I think maybe for many people, it's that they don't even have a roadmap of what that would look like. It just seems overwhelming.
And they didn't have a model, right?
Right.
In their own home, usually. It's funny because I didn't have it, but I remember, I mean, I think I came into the world like that, but I remember thinking like, I will absolutely never be in this kind of relationship. Like I was just not, I would rather be alone, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. But I was paying attention, you know? I was like, this isn't fair. It doesn't seem right. And by the way, no one's happy. So
that was obvious
to me. It was.
Before you begin, I do want to interrupt you and tell our listeners.
That's so rare.
Yes. Yeah. That this would be a great time to pause the podcast, actually. And if you haven't read yet, read
people
the
think that I put you up to this.
No. Just sometimes buy the book, Rethink Love, and read it. It really will transform. Because I think going back to what we just said is that I think for so many people, even if they desire something deep and different, there just isn't a roadmap. And Rethink Love, the book, is a great roadmap for that. So that, yes, it's a lifetime work, but at least you have a way to get there. I think for so many couples, it's just that, okay, things aren't exactly where we want them to be, but like, how in the world do we ever get them to where they want to be? So the book, I think is really important, but not just to read the book, but to build your relationship around the book. And second, go to spirituallyhungry.life. And watch Rethink Love, Monica's really masterclass on relationships. Again, I think the most important benefit besides being entertaining and educational and full of wisdom is that it actually gives a roadmap for couples to really, you know, to create that pathway to a real partnership, to a relationship that will be deep and meaningful and thriving.
So there's many, many things I can say about relationships, but I kind of want to focus on one specific area that's not very sexy. And as you said at the beginning, and I do see this mostly with men, they don't usually want to work on the relationship because it seems like it's going to be a hassle and painful and more complaining about what they didn't do.
I'm so busy at work. Now I
have to come home. It's not fun. I just want to check out, veg out. And I don't like to stereotype, but that's been my experience working with couples.
Have you ever met a man who was like, oh, yeah, let's do the work?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because the woman doesn't want to do the work. It's one or the other. It's rarely.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do I know this person?
But that's why I don't like to assign it to sexes, but usually women are just more eager. We are fixers, right? And in the rare cases where I find women just fully just not in that place, not because they're not even aware of it, the man usually, or in with the couples I've worked with mostly. But I think that fighting is important because it gives us an opportunity to become closer if there is repair, right? And again, first thing has to happen, there has to be a shift in our minds that it's not just meant to be seamless, like nothing is. And I think we understand that in other areas of our life, like growing a business or raising children or taking care of a pet, whatever it is. But when it comes to a relationship, we have this false notion based on things that we've seen growing up that it's supposed to be always or mostly romantic, fun, and seamless, right? So the first thing is fighting is necessary because it shows us what's
and to
important
be clear,
to
when
us.
When you say fighting, you just mean, you know,
no, but I mean,
other.
So there is a caveat, right? It's fighting, but you have to have a fighting style that
right,
you both choose
on. But even I think what you're saying is so important is that it's even as it relates to arguments, right? It doesn't have to be, I remember recently we've had this where even a tone of voice in a conversation or something that's said, so it's not just a huge fight. When you say fighting, I think you're not just talking about the potential beautiful fruit benefit that comes from learning how to fight in a way that deepens the relationship, but it's really trying to use every bump in the road, every interaction that isn't optimal, not as, you know, a reason for anger, resentment, disappointment.
Or proof that you're with the wrong person.
But rather as an opening to deepen the relationship. And I know this is something that, you know, you and I are, you know, we try to be as mindful of this as possible. And even if there's, you know, I think it was yesterday or the day before, we had like an interaction And
that would be yesterday.
Yeah, oh, you remember? I fortunately, unfortunately forget them quickly. And you pointed out that the interaction, it wasn't a big deal, but the interaction wasn't the way we want to be interacting with each other. And I think that's, and so I believe we actually got closer, right? And I think the bigger will, that's why I think with these, call them fights, disagreements, or just assessing something that can be better is not negative in any way, really. It's actually a doorway into a beautiful opportunity to deepen your
closest intimacy, your vulnerability.
It's as powerful, if not more powerful, than a hug or a kiss.
Well, somebody once asked us, we were giving a talk on relationships, and they asked us, I remember very specifically, he said, what was the worst fight you ever had? And, you know, tell us about it. He was trying to be like salacious, like he really wanted, you know. And it was a great question.
The time you slapped me.
No, because I said to him.
The time you punched me? Okay, the time you kicked me.
So, yeah, some people might believe you. So I said, I don't remember the fight, but I remember how we repaired it. Because that's what stayed with me. And it was, I remember it was one of our bigger arguments, but I remember how we repaired and how much closer we felt because of it. And then I talked about the reparation, but I couldn't remember for the life of me what the argument was actually about.
Interesting.
And I think that's the point. If you're kind of navigating this correctly. So
sorry, I hope our listeners, you know, take the time to take this in. This, because it's a completely revolutionary view of how you get close in relationships, right? People think, oh, we'll go on a great vacation. Also true. We'll have a great night on the town. Also true. All those moments, you know, all the beautiful ways that relationships make us happy are also ways to deepen the relationship. But maybe even more powerful than all of those are the moments of, you know, small or big.
We're talking about conflict. We're talking about misunderstandings, hurt feelings,
but
being inconsiderate. But the point of this is when you talk about these things and you come back together, it is the glue for the relationship. And
right.
So I see a lot of couples are like, oh, no, I just shouldn't say anything. I'm just going to bite my tongue or leave it, you know, well enough alone, or, you know, happy wife, happy life, all these isms that people go by. And it's really just because they're uncomfortable having a hard conversation. But if you have those conversations, it literally is the glue, because now you've learned something about yourself. You've expressed it. You've told your partner what you maybe could do differently or what you wish for them to do. And now if you're both thinking spiritual, kind of proactive people, you're going to pay attention to that and you're going to use it to become even
closer. I just think it's so profound because, again, and if you don't, you're actually missing an opportunity to deepen your relationship, right? So the shift in consciousness is that these moments are not, again, you know, things we have to get over, but rather they're a beautiful opportunity to actually deepen our relationship.
And I do that with our kids too. I had a little thing with one of ours yesterday. Yesterday was a great day for me. Maybe that's why today it was interesting. It's been, LA's been great. But I didn't want to be reactive, so I didn't say anything. And then just before bed, I texted this child of ours and I was like, hey, not a big deal.
The last name is Burring.
I'm not going to say which sex. I was like, hey, this happened and this is why I felt uncomfortable. And I'm sure you didn't mean it, but I'm not okay with it. And you might want to consider this. And so we had a back and forth, and then he accepted it.
Oh,
apologized.
Wasn't he?
Oopsie. Okay, so that... But then I said, why don't you just think about it? Let's sleep on it. We'll talk tomorrow. And then we continue the conversation today. And there is a closeness. And then it continued into the afternoon. Small things, just, but the point is we had 3 points of contact based on something that I expressed. And because he cares what I think and he cares about our relationship, and because I do, now we're even closer from that exchange. So it doesn't have to be.
Now, again, just to underscore, because it's so beautiful, is that had you just said, listen, oh, it's not a big deal.
I went back
I'll
and forth with it. I was like, should
right?
I say, is going to explode? Yeah.
That you actually created a deeper relationship with him. Because you grab the opportunity to express yourself and, you know, maybe in the uncomfortable moment, even though with our kids, it's less so, but yeah.
So I want to share with our listeners, yeah. I think this will help them navigate if they want to start doing this in their most important relationships.
By the way, yeah, so it's not just a romantic relationship.
Right.
Your kids, your
friendship,
parents, friends.
Even a colleague, right? So there's 3 major styles of fighting. There is a conflict avoider, which is somebody would rather wash the dishes than argue a point. Let's agree to disagree. That's what that looks like. And by the way, there's probably a time for all of these things, but if you constantly go to the one thing, your relationship's not going to grow in the way that it could. The second is conflict validator. We'll bring up an issue calmly and then immediately go into problem solving, which for me kind of sometimes annoys me because I think that there needs to be space, time to process, time to really hear a person. And if you start to talk about an issue, even if it's calmly, and then right away fix it, then I don't think the person, either person's really fully being heard. You need to hear a person, you need to give them time to understand, to digest it, and then have a conversation about it. And then there
I think we said to remember that when we had our interaction yesterday, right? And that idea that you actually bring yourself to take in what the other person, your partner, your friend, your child says, rather than say, oh, I'm sorry, even saying, oh, I'm sorry, right? But actually taking that time, say, that's where change is going to come from.
Well, we did that because I knew I was annoyed when I left the house and I just didn't say anything. And I waited 10 minutes into my car drive to call you. And then we talked about it and there was a pushback and then back. But then you called me later. And I think that with the story I told about our child and with this story, there should be space, right? not in too much space, but just allowing there to be like a flow.
Then it's real and actually creates something.
Yeah.
As opposed to getting through it quickly and just saying, oh, I'm sorry, or whatever.
No.
This doesn't allow it, right? And it's a balance, right? You don't want it to drag on, but you want it to be that give and take that allows for understanding and a deepening.
And then the third one is conflict volatiles, which is express what they're feeling to prove that they're right, to just very quickly kind of get through it. To argue their point. It's not really taking you anywhere.
So do you mind just repeating the three?
Conflict avoider.
Right, so those are the ones that just don't want to have the argument.
Agree to disagree.
Which I think is a lot. The ones who quickly solve, right?
Conflict validator. Yeah, bring up an issue, immediately jump into problem solving. Conflict volatiles. Express passionately, prove that they are right and that the other person was wrong. So the goal, right, in whichever way you decide to express yourself is not to avoid conflict, but to navigate through it to come out stronger. So I think the key is when people are having an argument, what is the goal? What is the desired outcome? Is it to be right? Is it to make the other person feel guilty? Is it for them to hear you? Is it to become closer? I think if we know what our desire is, then first decide what you want the outcome to be and make sure it's fair. And then you can go back and decide how to go and explore it.
Well, I think when you say it's fair, I mean, I think the point is if, and this has to be from both sides, of course, but if both of you can agree, you know, we're going to have this discussion right now, but maybe even say the words, the reason I want to have this discussion with you is because I want to get closer to you. And then you proceed to say, you know, what happened. I think that, and by the way, I don't think this is something that happens in one conversation. I think this has to be practiced.
That's what I want to say. There's no one way to repair. It's going to be unique to each couple, but I think that this is the formula. Understand that there's going to be times of harmony, times of disharmony, and then repair. And it's a cycle that you do over and over again, right? There's going to be times that are flow, times that there's disruption, and then you go to repair. And then understand that it happens again.
And I think, then maybe amongst the most important thoughts through the discord is the reason we want to talk about it, the reason we want to express all of this is because we want to get closer. Not because I want you to say you're sorry or because I'm upset, but at the end of the day, the reason both of us want to go through this process is because we want to get closer.
Well, also it builds resiliency. Right.
To the relationship.
Meaning? So for example, for years of marathon training, right, you have to break the muscle down to build it back up again. And that's actually how it grows stronger, from small little tears that then get repaired. Now, I overdid it and I really tore something. But it's through that way that we actually get stronger, which is really interesting if you think about it. So it's the same with relationships. And we want to look at it like kind of through that lens. Without the strength building, which is basically what the arguments are, you can't become stronger. You actually atrophy and the muscles become weaker, as does the relationship. Because if you're never going through this cycle, then where is the strength? Where is the growth coming from? It's small little tears that create a stronger relationship. Now, our listeners might be wondering, how do you keep connection in conflict? right? Because if there's too much conflict, it's very hard to stay engaged. But even if there's conflict in here and there, how do you keep the connection even when it feels like you're often in conflict? And how do you keep the connection, especially in emotionally charged situations? So one is stay curious. Instead of jumping to conclusions, ask questions. Curiosity is one of the biggest tools. I always say to people, like, especially when you get triggered or you hear something negative or even from the person or about the person, just ask questions. You know, I heard this, or I heard you say this. Why did you say it? Is it something that I did?
And by the way, it's much easier said than done.
Because people are afraid to hear the answers for the most part.
Not just that. I think once people are in argument mode or in hurt mode, then the ego is there. And the ego is not curious about anything. The ego wants to be right. The ego wants to prove that it's right and that the other person's wrong. So I think...
Well, you have to be clear that you want to know the desire, the want behind the emotions.
I want you to explain that, because it's really important, and maybe unpack that. But I think it's important, again, not to underestimate how difficult it is.
Yes.
To come in with curiosity. I can, you know, Leonard, as we say, we've been married for, you know, 27 years, and it's not always easy. I catch myself. I don't know about you. Maybe
I help
maybe
you not. Catch you. No.
but the ego is ever present, right? And what you have to do is
make a choice, though.
Right.
I mean, I use the example of parents to small children. When they're teenagers, you start to feel the ego come out again. But when they're small, really small, and they're having a tantrum, you can either yell at them, or you can say, my God, what's wrong with my kid, or judge them, or whatever it is. But if you stop and say, okay, what might they be feeling right now? Why are they behaving like this in this moment? And what can I do to make them feel better? We can do that for a child because our expectations are different, right? And because we love them a little when they're small.
Yeah, but I'm not even sure that most parents come with that curiosity to their child when they're misbehaving. Again, I think often there's going to be that reactivity, like, be quiet or stop it, or rather.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's me. I love kids. And then I see this, like, with our friends, and I'm always watching behavior. And there's one child in particular who certain behavior for a very long time, like these crazy, wild, screaming tantrums that are getting worse as she gets older. So I got really curious about it. I started paying attention because it didn't add up. I don't think children are just like that.
In that case, for instance, I don't think the parents were curious, right? Unfortunately, they weren't aware, or they weren't curious. Yeah.
Right. We became curious together. But I think it has to be a conscious choice, right, for sure. But it's a really, really great tool. So that's number one.
Can you give an example? Because I think those two are corollary, right? That first come into the discussion, the repair discussion, with curiosity, and try to limit the ego. And then when you come with that curiosity, then, you know, try to figure out, and this is something you said quickly, but I think it's really worth stressing, what is the want
behind the words?
Behind the words, right? And those two things are related, right?
They're totally curiosity, related.
And the want behind the words. Maybe can you unpack
yeah, for sure.
a little bit more?
As I've written about that a lot, I think it's a really powerful tool. So the first one is, let's use the example of children. Because by our fourth child, I think I really became better at this. And she used to get really emotionally, like, overwhelmed, and she'd have like a tantrum. And I remember like pausing and saying, okay, what just happened before this? Couldn't really find it. What's really going on? What does she want? And she couldn't really express it because she was like 3, 4. And I could tell that she was feeling overwhelmed and that she just needed to feel safe, right? Because I was watching her, I was observing, and I came to that conclusion.
And you were curious.
So when I thought that was the answer, the next time she had the tantrum, I got down on my knees and I pulled her into my arms and I just held her. And then she calmed down, and then we were able to talk about it. But it's only because I was observing her and I was curious about the behavior.
Right.
Now,
and you wanted to figure out the one behind the screams.
Exactly. And so I did, and it worked like a magic every time. And then she eventually didn't have those tantrums anymore because I was able to help navigate that earlier on before she went into that meltdown mode. In relationships, and I had this recently with a couple where their fights were just crazy. Like, it would just devolve and he would explode 0 to 100, and then she'd react like begging him to calm down and stay and don't leave her. I'm not gonna say anything. and she wanted to know if she should leave. And I said, I'm not really sure why you're even asking that question, because clearly you don't want to leave. You've had this argument, from what she was telling me, like over and over again for years. She's left three times. Have you tried just being curious? Like, why does he act like this? What is he feeling insecure about? What is it that you could do to make him feel more secure? What is it that he wants from you? So I gave her some exercises to do and to write down some, I gave her some questions to think about and to journal. And they, sure enough, they had a fight that evening after she left. And she texted me the next day and she said, I cannot believe how it worked. He did the same usual thing, screaming at her, threatening her, leaving, whatever. And then she just stopped. She didn't react the way she always did. And she said, what am I doing that's making you feel? Is there something I can do to make you feel better? How can I help? What is it that you really want? And she said, he couldn't believe it. He like stopped and he was so appreciative. And over, he's like, I can't believe you asked, right? Because he didn't have the tools for whatever reason. So it is something that really, really works. That's how it works.
Beautiful.
The second way to keep connection during conflict is prioritizing empathy. You know, I love empathy and I love talking about empathy, writing about it. No. Yes. Okay.
Yes. I have to. You triggered me. Mm. So pause the podcast right now. Go to Amazon or wherever you get your books and order Monica and Abigail's latest book, The Tale of the Other Glove, which is all about empathy. So I cannot hear the word empathy without thinking about your book. And I do think it's both a beautiful book and one that everybody should read. And especially as we're getting closer to the holidays, buy it for every single person you know.
So a great thing about empathy, because I've gotten this question a lot on different TV shows I've been on promoting the book and podcasts. You know, what really is empathy? How do you know you're doing it correctly? How do you know it's not sympathy? How do you not become the person's emotion? So when you feel somebody's pain, you don't want to become it. You don't want to internalize it, but you want to come from kind of a higher perspective. How can I help? How can I put myself in this person's shoes? What would they need? Right? Why might they be doing this? What happened to make them feel this way? Again, the curiosity comes in there, but also to loop back to them what they've said. So if somebody's expressed something or they're sharing something with you, you would say something like, I heard you say blah, blah, blah. Am I understanding this correctly? Because now the person feels heard and you had to take the time to consider what they might be feeling and you've expressed it back.
Interesting. I think last week's episode with Charles Duhigg,
yes.
he mentioned that idea as well. And again, I think it's something that's very powerful.
And it seems very simple, but... Right?
And explain why. Why? Can you explain why? Why is it so important to loop back to them what you've heard or what you hear them sharing?
Because often people will keep trying to prove their point, say it over and over again, because they don't feel like you've listened to them or that you're hearing them. So if you look somebody in the eye and you say, okay, if I understand this correctly, this is what you're feeling. Is that accurate? So now they feel seen and heard and they've gone back and they can either correct you. Maybe you didn't hear it correctly, or they can say, yes, that's how I'm feeling. It's really a point of connection.
Beautiful.
The third is take breaks, step away, pause on a discussion, and come back to it. There's no harm in that. And sometimes it's very, very necessary. And the fourth is consistent check-ins, which we do often. I mean,
what does that look like? Maybe, because again, I think a lot of couples don't do this.
So it's talking about things that you're feeling outside of conflict. So it's even just being emotionally intelligent, right? You're sharing your deepest thoughts, fears, hopes, how your day was. It's that point of contact, constant contact outside of conflict. So when conflict happens, then you're having conversations, and that's not the only time you're having conversations. It keeps you on a very steady, straight path to growth.
I think this is an important point, and I think we try to be mindful about this and help with your, especially with your help and support. We have these relatively often, these check-in conversations, but how would you recommend for a couple who's not as adept or hasn't really been having these check-ins? What is that? Is it on, you know, at night for 20 minutes? How does that conversation look like?
It's going to be different for each couple, but I think it's the idea is that you've
as you were saying, this is both important for our relationship with our children, with our spouses, with our friends, anything that's really, anybody is really important to us.
It's the fact that you've considered them, right? That they are part of your day, even if you're not together, even if you're having very separate days, that you actually take even 2 minutes, 3 minutes, either for a text, a call, a thought, or even to say, you know, I'm thinking of you. I can't wait to see you at this time. Let's take 20 minutes tonight to talk about this. It's a constant consideration of one another and allowing them to be part of your day, even when you're not together. And it's really It's not a big thing to do. A lot of people don't. They wait for a date night. So then what? That's 2 hours a week. Maybe if you go out twice a week, okay, maybe 4 hours. That's not enough. It's about small little moments. This creates intimacy, connection, emotional intelligence. I cannot underscore how important that is. Now, this idea I'm really excited about. This is probably the last one I'm going to share today for the sake of time. But so, you know, I love John Gottman's work. Yes. He's a relationship expert. He's done a lot of research, has science to back up his ideas. So he found that 69% of all relationship conflict and problems are perpetual, which means that they never go away and they never get fully solved. That's really fascinating. Okay.
And that can be discouraging.
I'm going to break it down though. 69%. So his point in exploring this is that he learned that conflict needs to be managed rather than solved, which is really interesting because most people want to solve things, especially men. But solve. It has to be resolved right away. And some things are not that way. So how do you do this? So one of the examples and one of the experiments they did in a lab, they had the same couples come back year after year and they brought up the same issues, even 20 years later, 20 years.
That's a little.
This is what they found.
Okay. Because I don't know if I agree that they have to remain.
Well, let me get to they don't have to remain. But and that's why this tool that I'm going to share, I think is really, really powerful. And it's from him. But I think that, again, they don't have to. But obviously, these people, maybe they're not using all these different resources. And again, I really believe you need to have spirituality and relationship to be able to get on the other side of conflict. So I don't know with these people that were coming back and they had the same issues for New Year's. We know a lot of people like that, right? They will never get over certain things ever, ever. Of course, it's possible, but you know what it requires. So he said, fighting right, whether we're talking about perpetual problems or solvable problems, he wants to know, he's asking, what is the biggest mistake that people make in a relationship?
They don't repair.
They fight to win.
They fight to win.
Which makes you feel really lonely in a relationship, right? Because nobody wants to be the loser and one person's the winner and it just creates more separation. So again, he talks about this in a different way, but basically the first step is want behind the words, which we just discussed. And he pre-designed questions to discover what it is people want, right? So that's what I'm gonna share now. So it's for sure not to be interrupted. And it's also not taking turns just speaking. So this one thing, again, I was super inspired by this. It's called the dreams within conflict conversation.
The dreams within conflict.
Conversations. So
The dreams. I've never heard this.
I know. When I found this, I was really inspired. So he vetted these people. He looked at their background, history, their ideal dreams, their values, their feelings. Like he really did a deep dive into their past. So there's one couple and they were fighting over whether to have a dog or not, right? One really, really wanted a dog. The other one really, really didn't. But like so much so that this was an argument they had over and over again. So they met with the couple. Jenny was opposed. Allison was all for it. So they went to this background check. So Allison asked Jenny, do you have a background childhood history that influences your position on this issue? And she said, absolutely. When I was a kid, I was chased by dogs, many dogs, and I was bitten by them. And of course, she's terrified of dogs. Like all the dogs, for whatever reason, were after her in the neighborhood. I don't know really why, but that's what it was. And then the dream question came after that. So the first was, what was the background history around the subject? And what is the dream question? So what is your ideal dream with not having a dog?
What does that mean, your ideal dream with not having a dog?
So what is your, like in your mind, right? Why? So besides your background history, we know that obviously that's why you don't want the dog. But what is the dog representing for you that you don't want it today? Besides that. So really? How does it affect a dream? Decide.
Maybe it's just the childhood
let
trauma.
Let me finish. So her answer was, if we don't have a dog, then we're not tied down. We can go and travel the world together. We can have experiences, adventures. That's what I really want. So again, it's the want behind the words. He's using the word dreams. I use a different vocabulary, but it's basically, it's conflicting with
a dream
that she has.
And is that always the case?
I think it's always the case because, by the way, I've shared this with couples I've worked with, and they went back and they're like, oh my God, we haven't been able to get over this issue forever because they didn't know what the argument was how it was hindering the dream that they have, right? So it's really a profound tool. And I really think it works, especially for those things that seem unsolvable. So then they flipped it and they asked Allison, what's your history with dogs? And she said, my golden retriever was my best friend. I grew up all alone. And the only person or anybody they spoke to was my dog. Like, it means everything to me. So then the dream question came. Her answer was, I see that getting a dog is the first step in creating a family. We'll have responsibility. We'll take care of a dog. Eventually, we'll have kids. This is really what her dream is. So they had two different dreams for what was next, right? And this dog represented something that would take one closer to the dream they had and one further away. So when they understood that, they were able to navigate it differently because they both wanted children, but maybe they would make it a priority to go travel more and then get the dog in a little while. And it just gave information to what the misunderstanding was. And I think that that's a lot of the issue of why people fight.
I think that's really, really, like you said, I think it's, and you've seen this in practice, those who truly take this seriously and really, it profoundly changes the way we navigate those issues that don't seem solvable. And again, I think to the point, I think, yes, with a spiritual background, but with these tools as well, one can, I think, if not solve all the issues, certainly come to understand them and see them in a different light.
And bring light to it, exactly.
So if you had to say one thing to sum today's episode up to our listeners.
The power of repair impacts the whole journey of the relationship, and choosing connection over convenience is optimal, and showing up for each other, especially when it's difficult, with curiosity brings a closeness that you really can't achieve in any other way. You know, I often say to people, they're like, you know, how do I know this person's the one? Of course, it's a bigger conversation, but I think one of the biggest things is ask yourself, this person that I'm with or that I'm dating or that I'm interested in, if I had to imagine the worst day of my life, how do I think they would show up for me? And how have they shown me that, right? Because that's really what you're going to work with throughout the relationship is the core of the person, the essence, and same with yourself.
Beautiful. Yeah, and if I think for me, the most important really shift in consciousness, hopefully for all of our relationships, is the understanding that those moments of disagreement, big or small, are actually some of the most important pathways into really deepening our relationship. So you don't want to ignore them. You don't want to push them aside. You actually want to grab them for the opportunities that they are and use some of the tools that you shared today.
And healthy couples are always talking, right? Really always talking, especially, I mean, about all kinds of things, even when it's difficult.
Beautiful. So I'd like to share, it's been a while since I shared a letter from one of our
listeners. That's some long letters there.
There are, but I'm going to read one, and please continue to send your letters, questions, comments, stories, inspirations to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. And this is from our friend Giselle. Hi, dear Monica and Michael. I am Giselle. I write you with feelings of gratitude and love for your amazing way to share light upon all of us who follow you, and certainly to me. Your episode left me reflecting about whether I am really keeping busy in my life in the right way and how I could do even more for the world, and also what activities are keeping me away from that desire to share myself to others. And this reflection is most inspiring. Thank you very much. But also, it led me to value those little things where you do share. For instance, since I moved from Mexico to the Canary Islands, I got a wonderful job helping a startup desalinizing seawater. I do the administrative and accounting stuff, but I feel useful to a transcendental mission. However, because nowadays I am calmer and happier, some of my colleagues have started to shout when I arrive in the morning, "Here comes the joy of the house." Mm-hmm. Isn't that great? I am not receiving this with my ego. In fact, I have not shared this with anyone. I simply see how you can touch others with light in everyday situations when you have done your effort yourself to rise above your worst flaws and selfish desires. Beautiful. On another anecdote, similar to what happened to Monica and Abigail with that dad that was mad at his son. OMG. This has happened to me several times. Normally, I do not dare to say anything since I am learning to stop feeling responsible for the whole world. But once at a park, I saw a mother completely out of control, shouting to her daughter. And coming from a battle with my own issues, with losing control of emotions and a verbally violent mom myself, What I did is to approach the other mother with no judgment And instead of reprimanding her for being so violent, I touched her shoulder and tried to share to her that I empathize with how difficult it is sometimes to know how to correctly raise a child and how this task can drain us at times. Amazingly, she started to cry. And I invited her to sit for a while, and I let her vent all of her confusion, fears, and rage about being a mom.
Wow.
And I guess it did help her, and I felt happy to have reacted in that way and given her some calm at that moment. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Love, Giselle. So Giselle, thank
Giselle,
you.
Giselle, maybe I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So thank you. I mean, I think there's a lot of really beautiful things that Giselle shared.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will inspire our listeners as well. Thank you, Giselle, for sharing this with us and with all of our listeners. And again, a reminder to all of our listeners to share all of your comments, questions, topic ideas, stories, inspirations. Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. And as always, make sure you go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews everywhere you get your podcasts, share it with everybody you know. I hope your relationships are improved by listening to this episode, and they will be. And as always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
And stay spiritually hungry.